Real ghost stories from real people. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.
The discovery seemed innocent enough, a forgotten board game tucked away in the corner of a child's closet. But what if it wasn't forgotten? What if it was left behind for a reason? In the shadowed halls of a quiet Jacksonville condo, the ordinary gave way to something extraordinary, and a young boy's life would never be the same. When Clay and his family moved into their new home, they thought they were leaving their troubles behind. But hidden within the walls of this seemingly ordinary condo was a history that refused to be buried. It started with small, almost ignorable sounds, footsteps pacing above, faint at first, then louder. Shadows began to stretch where they shouldn't, and something unseen crept closer, embedding itself into the fabric of their lives. What unfolded wasn't just a haunting, but a slow erosion of reality itself. Was it the remnants of an old life trapped in time? Or had Clay's childhood curiosity awakened something far darker than he could have imagined? One by one, the family would come to face what they couldn't see, but could never ignore. Let's get to the letter. They write, "Dear Tony, my name is Clay. I grew up in Jacksonville, Florida, in a condo my family moved into when I was 8 years old. It was a quiet neighborhood, trees lining the streets, neighbors who mostly kept to themselves. At first, the house felt like a fresh start, but there was something about it, something I couldn't explain even back then. The condo was mostly empty when we moved in, save for a few odd things left behind by the previous owners. My bedroom had one of those discoveries, a Ouija board tucked away in the closet. It seemed harmless at the time, though I remember feeling uneasy about it, like it didn't belong there, or maybe we didn't. My mom laughed it off when I asked why someone would leave it behind. They probably just forgot about it, she said. But I wasn't so sure. The noises started a few weeks after we moved in. At first, it was faint, a light tapping, as if someone was walking upstairs, even when I was the only one home. I'd call out, 'Hello? Is someone there?' And the sound would stop. Sometimes I'd hear pacing back and forth across the upstairs hallway. My mom said it was just the house settling, but even at 8 years old, I knew that wasn't true. Houses don't settle like that. One afternoon, I came home from school, my backpack slung over my shoulder, and let myself in. The house was quiet. Too quiet. I dropped my bag by the door and headed to the kitchen for a snack. That's when I heard it, a loud, deliberate thud from upstairs. It wasn't pacing this time. It sounded like a bowling ball hitting the floor. My heart pounded as I froze in place, waiting for something, anything, to happen next. I wasn't brave enough to investigate. I stayed downstairs until my sister got home, and even then, I didn't say anything. I didn't want to seem scared, but as the weeks went on, the noises grew louder, more insistent. One day, I was playing with my sister Amanda, who was 3 at the time. We were running around the house, laughing and chasing each other. I darted up the stairs thinking she'd follow. When I turned around to look, I froze. Someone was following me up the stairs, but it wasn't Amanda. It was a girl about Amanda's age wearing a blue dress that looked like it came out of a history book. Her long hair framed a face that seemed too pale, too still. My first thought was that Amanda had somehow changed her clothes in an instant, but as I blinked, the girl disappeared, fading into the wall as if she was never there. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't tell my mom. She wouldn't believe me. And when I tried to tell Amanda, she just giggled and kept playing. It wasn't long before the apparitions and noises became part of the background of our lives. I'd hear the pacing after school or the occasional slam of a door upstairs. But after a while, I stopped paying attention. It was easier that way. For a few years, things quieted down. The noises stopped, the strange feelings faded, and I started to think we'd imagined it all. Maybe it was just the stress of moving to a new place. I convinced myself that ghosts weren't real and life could go back to normal. But I was wrong. It was September of 1999 when everything started up again. This time, it was worse. I just turned 14 and was lying in bed late one night. My room was dark except for the faint glow of a streetlight outside. That's when I felt it. The unmistakable sensation of being watched. I had tried to ignore it, pulling the covers up over my shoulders, but the feeling only grew stronger. My room was warm, almost too warm, but a cold chill swept over me. Slowly, I turned my head toward the window. That's when I saw it. Standing in the corner of my room, barely illuminated by the streetlight, was a hooded figure. It was tall, too tall, and completely black, as if it absorbed all the light around it. No face, no features, just a shadow in the shape of a man. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't move. It started to glide across the room, its movements slow and deliberate. When it passed in front of the window, its outline became sharper, clearer. It wasn't walking. It was floating, its dark form rippling like smoke. I watched in horror as it approached my closet, lingered for a moment, then turned back toward me. I wanted to scream, but my voice wouldn't work. The figure moved closer, and as it did, the temperature in the room plummeted. My feet, which had been hanging off the edge of the bed, suddenly felt icy cold, like they'd been plunged into freezing water. The figure paused at the foot of my bed, then started gliding toward the door. I couldn't take it anymore. I grabbed my pillow, covered my face, and ran out of the room, not caring if it was still there or not. That night changed everything for me. I started sleeping with a pillow over my head, a habit I've never been able to break. To this day, I can't let my feet hang off the edge of the bed, and that was just the beginning. After that night, the activity in our house grew stronger, more impossible to ignore. It wasn't just me anymore. My family started experiencing it too. My younger sister, Amanda, was the first to notice. She told me one morning that she'd woken up to her bedroom door creaking open. At first, she thought it was one of us checking on her, but then she heard it. A little girl's voice, soft but insistent. "Amanda, come play," it said. Terrified, she rolled over and whispered to my older sister, Allison, who shared the room with her, "Did you hear that?" Allison, wide-eyed, nodded. Neither of them slept the rest of the night. I wasn't surprised when they told me. By then, I had already come to accept that we weren't alone in the house. But even with that knowledge, I couldn't shake the fear. It wasn't just the noises or the apparitions anymore. It was the feeling that something was watching us, waiting. My mom tried to dismiss it all as our imaginations, but even she couldn't ignore the strange events forever. One night, she was lying in bed trying to fall asleep when she saw it, a figure at the end of her bed. It wasn't the faceless shadow I'd seen. This was a woman, older, with long, dark hair and features that looked distinctly Native American. She was just sitting there, staring at my mom with an expression my mom couldn't describe. Terrified, my mom closed her eyes, took a deep breath, and did something none of us had dared to do. She spoke to it. "This is my house now," she said, her voice trembling. "You don't belong here anymore." When she opened her eyes, the woman was gone. After that, my mom decided it was time to take action. She called in a priest to bless the house, hoping it would drive out whatever was haunting us. For a little while, it seemed to work. The footsteps stopped, the doors stayed shut, and the house felt almost normal again. But it didn't last. Within weeks, the activity returned stronger than ever. The footsteps on the stairs became a nightly occurrence. I started yelling at whatever it was to shut up, just so I could get some sleep. It would work for a while, but the peace never lasted. The final straw came one night when my mom was home alone. She told me later that she'd heard something running up the stairs, heavy and fast, like a person in a panic. She froze in bed, expecting to hear the door burst open, but nothing happened. When she finally worked up the courage to check, the house was empty. By the time we moved to Connecticut, we were all exhausted. The house had drained us, and we were ready to leave it all behind. At first, it worked. Our new apartment was peaceful. No footsteps, no voices, no shadows. For the first time in years, we could sleep without fear. But something about the experiences in that house stayed with me. As I got older, I became fascinated with the paranormal. I started visiting places that were rumored to be haunted, taking pictures and hoping to capture something, anything that could prove what I'd seen. One of those places was Hell's Hollow Road, a dark, winding stretch in the woods outside Plainfield, Connecticut. The stories about it were horrifying: executions, murders, and whispers of witchcraft. One night I went with some friends, and we decided to stop near an old lot off the road. I snapped a few pictures, and when I looked at them later, I couldn't believe my eyes. In one photo, there was a dense fog shaped like a small figure with a distorted, decomposed face. Another showed hundreds of glowing orbs and what looked like the outlines of people, figures bound and trapped in a moment of agony. I thought it was fascinating at first, a validation of everything I'd experienced as a kid. But then, strange things started happening again. Objects in my apartment would move on their own. My trash can, which had a hinged lid, would swing back and forth as if someone had hit it. Doors would creak open and then slam shut. At night, I'd wake up feeling like something was watching me, its presence heavy and oppressive. The worst part was the visions. Before I opened a door, I'd sometimes see flashes of grotesque faces, twisted, evil things that seemed to be warning me or trying to frighten me. I'd hesitate, heart pounding. But when I opened the door, nothing was there. I can't help but wonder if my fascination with ghost hunting has brought something back into my life, something I thought I'd left behind in Florida. I still think about that house, about the Ouija board in the closet, the girl on the stairs, and the shadow that chilled me to my core. Whatever followed me feels darker now, more malevolent. I've tried to ignore it, to push it out of my mind, but it's always there, lurking in the shadows. I don't know if I'll ever be free of it. Clay's story is one that lingers, not just in the telling, but in the quiet moments after you've heard it. It's a tale of curiosity, fear, and the unintended consequences of what might happen when we look too closely into the unknown. What stands out most is the psychological toll these experiences have taken on Clay. From the haunting chill of that hooded figure to the eerie girl on the stairs, these encounters shaped him, instilling fears and habits that persist to this day. A childhood marked by unexplained terror often leaves scars deeper than we realize. Scars that don't fade when the house is left behind. Psychologists might explain some of Clay's experiences as manifestations of anxiety or sleep paralysis, especially the chilling, paralyzing moments in his bedroom. Others might suggest his fascination with the paranormal became a self-fulfilling prophecy, where the more he sought out the supernatural, the more he perceived it around him. Perhaps these visions, noises, and movements were his mind's way of processing fear, stress, or even trauma from his early years in the condos. But let's not dismiss the other side of the coin. The consistency of the experiences shared among multiple family members raises questions about whether something truly supernatural was at play. The girl in the blue dress, the Native American woman at the foot of the bed, and the shadow figure in Clay's room, these apparitions defy simple explanations. Could they be echoes of past lives tied to the land or remnants of something awakened by that forgotten Ouija board? Then there's the matter of Hell's Hollow. The images Clay captured, fogs shaped like figures, glowing orbs, and scenes of torment, leave little room for coincidence. Is it possible that his ghost hunting adventures opened a door that can't be closed, allowing whatever followed him from Jacksonville to take root in his new life? In the end, Clay's story is both a cautionary tale and a haunting reminder. Some things are better left undisturbed. Whether the figures he encountered were products of his mind or spirits from beyond, they've left an indelible mark. And perhaps the scariest part is this. Clay isn't sure if they're done with him yet. What do you think? Was Clay's torment born of his own imagination, or was he truly haunted by forces beyond our understanding? One thing's for sure. The next time you hear footsteps in an empty house, you might think twice before assuming you're alone.
Want more real ghost stories from real people? Then press subscribe now. We're dropping new ghost stories every single day. This is Into the Paranormal with Tony Bruschi.